Chapter 21. Why wound so keenly right, that it would die? Spirit of the years, nay, blame not. For what judgment can he blame? And that immense unweeding mind is shown one far above for thinking, processive, yet superconscious, a clairvoyancy that knows not what it knows, yet works therewith. The cognizance he mourn, life's doom to feel, if I report it meetly, came unmeant, emerging with blind gropes from impercipience by listless sequence luckless tragic chance, in your more human tongue. Spirit of the pities, intense unneeded in the economy of vitality, which might have ever kept a sealed cognition as doth the will itself. Chorus of the years, aerial music, nay, 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 your hasty judgments stay, until the topmost cime have crowned the last entablature of time. Oh, heap not blame on that in brooding will. Oh, pause, till all things all their days fulfill. Scene V, London. The Guildhall, a crowd of citizens has gathered outside to watch the carriages as they drive up, and deposit guests invited to the Lord Mayor's banquet, for which event the hall is brilliantly lit within. A cheer rises when the equipage of any popular personage arrives at the door. First citizen, well, well. Nelson is the man who ought to have been banqueted tonight. But he is coming to town in a coach different from these. Second citizen, will they bring his poor splintered body home? First citizen, yes. They say he's to be tombed in marble, at St. Paul's or Westminster. We shall see him, if he lays in state. It will make a patriotic spectacle for a fine day. Boy, how can you see a dead man, father, after so long? First citizen, they'll embalm him, my boy, as they did all the great Egyptian admirals. Boy, his lady will be handy for that, won't she? First citizen, don't he ask awkward questions. Second citizen, here's another coming. First citizen, that's my Lord Chancellor Elton. What he'll say, and what he'll look. Mr. Pitt will be here soon. Boy, I don't like Billy. He killed Uncle John's parrot. Second citizen, how may ye make that out, youngster? Boy, Mr. Pitt made the war, and the war made us want sailors, and Uncle John went for a walk down Wapping High Street, to talk to the pretty ladies one evening, and there was a press all along the river, that night a regular hot one, and Uncle John was carried on board a man of war to fight under Nelson, and nobody minded Uncle John's parrot, and it talked itself to death. So Mr. Pitt killed Uncle John's parrot, see it, sir? Second citizen, you had better have a care of this boy, friend. His brain is too precious for the common risks of Cheapside. Not but what he might as well have said Boney killed the parrot, when he was about it. And as for Nelson, who's now sailing shinier seas than ours, if they've rubbed her off his slate where he's gone to, the French papers say that our loss in him is greater than our gain in ships, so that logically the victory is theirs. Gad, sir, it's almost true. A hurrahing is heard from Cheapside, and the crowd in that direction begins to hustle and show excitement.
First citizen, he's coming, he's coming. Here, let me lift you up, my boy. Why, they have taken out the horses, as I am man alive. Second citizen, Pitt forever. Why, here's a blade opening and shutting his mouth like the rest, but never a sound does he raise. Third citizen, I've not too much breath to carry me through my day's work, so I can't afford to waste it in such luxuries as crying hurrah to aristocrats. If he was 10 yards off it, think I was shouting as loud as any. Second citizen, it's a very mean practice of ye to husband yourself at such a time, and gape in dumb show like a frog in Plato marshes. Third citizen, no, sir, it's economy. A very necessary instinct in these days of ghastly taxations, to pay half the armies in Europe. In short, in the word of the ancients, it is scarcely compass mentis to do otherwise. Somebody must save something, or the country will be as bankrupt as Mr. Pitt himself is, by all account, though he don't look it just now.
Pitt's coach passes, drawn by a troop of running men and boy.
The Prime Minister is seen within, a thin, erect, up-nosed figure, with a flush of excitement on his usually pale face. The vehicle reached the doorway to the Guildhall and halts with a jolt. Pitt gets out shakily, and amid cheers enters the building.
Fourth citizen, quite a triumphal entry. Such is power, now worshipped, now accursed. The overthrow of all Pitt's European policy, when his hired army and his chosen general surrendered the Madome a month ago, is now forgotten. This Trafalgar will botch up many a ragged old repute, make Nelson figure as domestic saint no less than country's savior, Pitt exult as zenith star of England's firmament, and uncurse all the bogglers of her wheel at this adventurous time. Third citizen, talk of Pitt being ill. He looks hardy as a buck. First citizen, it's the news no more. His spirits are up like a rocket for the moment. Boy, is it, because Trafalgar is near Portugal, that he loves port wine? Second citizen, as I said, friend, this boy must go home, and be carefully put to bed. First citizen, well, whatever William's faults, it is a triumph for his virtues tonight.
Pitt having disappeared, the Guildhall doors are closed, and the crowd slowly disperses, till in the course of an hour the street shows itself empty and dark, only a few oil lamps burning. The scene opens, revealing the interior of the Guildhall, and the brilliant assembly of city magnates, lords, and ministers seated there, Mr. Pitt occupying a chair of honor by the Lord Mayor. His health has been proposed as that of the Savior of England, and drunk with acclamations.
Pitt, standing up after repeated calls, my lords and gentlemen, you have toasted me as one who has saved England and her cause. I thank you, gentlemen, unfeignedly. But no man has saved England, let me say. England has saved herself, by her exertions. She will, I trust, save Europe by her example.
Loud applause, during which he sits down, rises, and sits down again. The scene then shuts, and the night without has place.
Spirit of the years, those words of this man Pitt his last large words, as I may prophesy that ring tonight in their first mintage to the feasters here, will spread with aging, lodge, and crystallize, and stand embedded in the English tongue till it grow thin, outworn, and cease to be. So is ordained by that which all ordains, for words were never winged with apter grace, or blent with happier choice of time and place, to hold the imagination of this strenuous race.
Scene 6. 10. An inn at Rennes, night. A sleeping chamber. Two candles are burning near a bed in an alcove, and writing materials are on the table. The French admiral, Villeneuve, partly undressed, is pacing up and down the room.
Villeneuve, these hauntings have at last nigh proved to me that this thing must be done. Illustrious foe and teacher, Nelson, blessed and overblessed in thy outgoing at the noon of strife, when glory clasped thee round, while wayward death refused my coaxings for the like time call. Yet I did press where thickest missiles fell, and both by precept and example showed where lay the line of duty, patriotism, and honor, in that combat of despair.
He see himself in the glass as he passes.
Unfortunate Villeneuve, whom fate has marked to suffer for too firm a faithfulness. An emperor's chide is a command to die. By him accursed, forsaken by my friend, a while stern England's prisoner, then unloosed like some poor dolt unworth captivity, time serves me now for ceasing. Why not cease? When, as shades whisper in the chasmal night, better, far better, no percipients here. Oh happy lack, that I should have no child, to come into my hideous heritage, and groan beneath the burden of my name.
11. Spirit of the years, I'll speak. His mood is ripe for such a peril.
Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.